Hello, welcome to Spotlight, focusing on all things arty, crafty, cultural and good.
Spotlight, brought to you by the Isle of Man Arts Council.
This evening, we catch up with the newish bard, he's happily settled in the role now I believe, Bradley Chambers. Speak to Manx author Luke Quayne as he releases the penultimate book in his fantasy series. And jazz returns to the Erin Arts Centre. Remember, do get in touch with any creative artistic endeavours you might be involved in, planning, hoping to create, or would really like to. Go on, say it. Put in the spotlight. Poetic, theatrical, musical, literary, ceramic, sculpture, drag, film, mime, social media, digital, calligraphy. All the others, Lord knows what they are. Lots are forgotten. Just get in touch and tell me. HowardCain@manxradio.com, Kane with an E, or spotlight@manxradio.com. Love to hear from you. Let's get you on the show. What have you got to lose? First off, yeah, I'm going to head for some sun.
And come down south to sit in the sun. It's always sunny down south, particularly at the Erin Arts Centre where we are now, for a catch-up with Pip. And, I suppose we haven't been talking for a while, but we are now into, a new season at the EAC.
That's right. I think the last time we had a catch-up, which was also in the sun outside.
It was sunny then.
Was just pre-Manana Festival. Which was just a fantastic week. And we normally shot for a couple of weeks in August. So we're just back now off our
summer
our
break. Little,
off our, yeah, our summer halls.
So are we on the run to Christmas now, are we?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Absolutely full on till Christmas. And, the season's already off the mark. The Friday Film Club opens its doors again.
And the film club runs, does that run regularly through the sort of winter months?
Sort of irregularly. The intention is to do it once a month, but we do it sort of when we feel like it. And they tend to be sort of more esoteric and art house and often foreign language films. We normally do like a spoken word introduction to the films to set the scene and talk about the sort of cultural or political environments that led to the making of the film. So it's a whole little sort of event of its own, really.
Yeah. And you get a mixed audience for that?
Yeah, really. The cinephiles kind of crawl out the woodwork for these ones, and there are more of them than you'd think.
Always. October, of course, I think, sees the return of the Jazz Festival.
Well, it does, yeah. I think this will be the fourth Port Erin Jazz Festival now. It started off, I don't know how long we thought that we could keep it going for.
You never know with jazz festivals.
No, you really don't. But I mean, we've been really lucky. We've had a fantastic set of artists, and all the shows have been really well attended, and it's just really taken off. So this year, we start on Friday, October the 3rd, with Dan Forshaw's quartet. I think it's fair to say that Dan is a real saxophone nerd. He's an aficionado of the saxophone. Dan did that trip to Williamsburg Bridge in New York and went there every day and played his sax. He really did do that. So following in the footsteps of the great Sonny Rollins.
Yeah.
He studied with Branford Marsalis. He studied with Eric Alexander and Dave Liebman and really absorbed the spirit, the jazz spirit of New York.
Some of the biggest names there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what he'll be doing with his quartet reflects that, that energy and that personal journey. Sharp interplay. I think they do original compositions and rework classics, so drawing lines from John Coltrane right through to the modern day. So I'm looking forward to that. The support comes from local Party Starters Blue Train Big Band, who I think it's become customary now. They kick off the festival. So you know what to expect there. They're always fantastic. Big shirts, big tunes.
Yeah, big sound.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely corking. Yep, so that's wonderful. As you say, a sort of a Coltrane disciple there, and someone who's actually trodden in the steps. What else is happening in the festival?
Well, the Saturday, so starting at about 1:30 at the Bay Hotel and the Riddler in the Falcon's Nest, Port Erin, we have the finest local jazzers playing for free. So we've got Heinrich Manoeuvre, Daryl Williams, Mood Indigo and Loose Crew, who are all at the Bay Hotel. And then at Falcon's Nest, we have Blue Vannin, Big Wheel Blues Band, and then basically whoever's left standing, big jam at the end with some of the guys who come down and play in the evening. The ones who are here normally sort of go around and have a drink and a play as well. So that's all pretty good fun. So that's all for free at those two venues, Bay and the Falcon, during the afternoon. And then in the evening, we have an outfit called Lucy Pickering's Court and Spark. Now, the clue's in the title there. Some of you Joni Mitchell fans might know that Court and Spark is, of course, the title of a Joni Mitchell album. Lucy's bands are basically a jazz tribute to the Laurel Canyon songwriters. So they're a quintet, and they're sort of reimagining classic tracks from the Laurel Canyon era. So guys like James Taylor, Joni Mitchell, Carole King, Ricky Lee Jones. Don't know how much further that goes. Jackson Browne, I don't know whether they get into Crosby and Young and those characters. But basically through a jazz lens. So I'm really looking forward to that as well. So I guess whether you're a jazz fan or an aficionado of that sort of golden age of singer-songwriters, that just should be something for you on Saturday. Now, the support for that one is from a band called the Stillmen, who are a local ensemble who basically under the leadership of John Stillmen, who is a local pianist and arranger, who may or may not contain Jerry Carter.
What, depending on whether he remembers?
Well, that's a possibility. Yeah.
And we'll hear a little more from Pip next week, including something I've been meaning to do for the last year or two, a night at the opera.
Spotlight, brought to you by the Isle of Man Arts Council.
Now, regular listeners will remember we heard from the 11th Manx Bard Bradley Chambers literally minutes after his inauguration, when Phil Gorm pounced cat-like to get his first impressions. Now that he's had a few weeks to settle into the role, I thought it would be nice to pounce on Bradley again, but in a more leisurely fashion, a bit like my cat Morris. So basically entice him into the studio, then flop sideways onto a chair and just stare at him, but with the microphone in hand, so we could hear how he's adapted to his prominent new position in the cultural life of the Isle of Man, and a little about his poetic journey thus far.
I think poetry has to grab you quite early in life, really. So I guess like most people, or many people, it really started in school. I had great teachers of English and literature, and that really inspired me to read poetry and start to connect with it and start to understand it. And then it carried on through life, really. And there's times I've left it alone for a bit, and then I come back to it. And there's certain points in your life, it just... It has a meaning, it has a purpose, I suppose. But it's difficult to answer that question. Why do I write poetry? I've really no idea. Maybe I'll never know. I do know that once you start writing, it's difficult to stop.
Yeah. Any particular inspirations on the poetic front?
No, not really, because it could be anything. I mean, poetry, I think, springs from emotion, and it's really what sparks an emotional response, and that might be anything. It might be an incident, something that happens in your life, be that positive or negative. It might be out for a walk on a beautiful morning. It might be out for a walk on a rainy afternoon. It could be anything, but I think a lot of my poetry is inspired by experience and people's voices. I'm very interested in what people have to say to me and what other people have experienced and been through, and trying to make that poetic, I suppose. That's what I try to do.
And I'm always interested in this when talking to poets. How would you describe your sort of writing style? Because it varies tremendously when you talk to people. Some people
as you say, they get inspired and they might carry around a notebook or, you know, their phone or an iPad or whatever the case may be, and boom, they'll put sing. They almost do it spontaneously. Mm. Others might just jot the odd words or thoughts or lines down and come back to it later. I know some people, again, writing at night. How do you describe your writing style?
I think it's varied, is what I would say there. I'm not sure I have a particular style, because what I've tried to do is make myself write in various forms, and I've tried to learn poetry, and I think that's what you have to do to become fairly accomplished in it. Not that I'm saying I am, but I think you have to kind of go the hard yards and be able to write in a variety of styles, be that villanelle, sestinas, pontoons, sonnets and everything else like that. So that my style definitely varies, and I might write long poetry about feelings and emotions, or I might want to write really sharp poetry in the form of a sonnet about a particular event or a particular experience. So it really does depend, but I don't confine myself to any one style. I'm quite determined not to do that, really.
And do you think the topic or the subject of which you're going to write, does that affect the style you sort of use?
Yeah, certainly it does. Sometimes it's more effective to write in freestyle without rhyme and not to be confined by that, particularly if you're trying to represent people and represent voices, then often you need much more freedom, really, about how to write that particular type of poem. But if you're writing something that's maybe got a pastoral theme, then you're probably writing a more traditional style, in lyric style, for example. So style matches content, I think. That's what I would say. I think it has to follow that.
Let's look at the actual role then of the bard and coming up. 11th bard, of course. Have you sort of followed or seen what your predecessors have done in the role?
Oh, for sure I have. And there's no greater inspiration for me than my predecessors, really. Starting with the posthumous honour bestowed to T.E. Brown, that he became the first Manx bard, and I can't say I've read everything he's ever written, there's far too much of it, but I've certainly read, Betsy Lee, for example, and The Manx Witch, things like that I really like. But yeah, I've followed, I think, I can't say I've followed each of them, because I've not been here long enough to follow them when they were bard, but I've certainly kind of read their works, really. So that's what I've done. But certainly the more recent ones, I'd been following and was very much inspired by. Jordan, for example, my immediate predecessor, I think she tended to write very much from her own experiences, often in quite a raw, almost visceral way, really. And I found that quite inspiring, quite exciting.
There are clearly things within the bardic role, you know, writing, coming up and chatting to us here at Manx Radio, writing for the paper, always being invited to events and such like. But there's usually some sort of pet topic or something that the individual bard likes to sort of drive through their bardic year. Is anything ticking that box for you?
I think I'm finding my way with that. So I don't have a specific project that I must get done this year. I'm not approaching it in that way. Mm. And what I'm doing at the moment is very much shaped by invitations to a whole variety of events. So I want to make sure I'm out there, that I'm visible. So if I have a project, it's that, really. It's about trying to promote poetry in a variety of settings throughout the island, and try and connect with people who maybe wouldn't normally bother with poetry or wouldn't think it related to them. So I want to be looking for opportunities to do that and very much capture the voice of real people, ordinary people. So I think that would be my big project for the year. It's just about how I would really do that. So I'm open to suggestions and ideas, really.
And how have the first few weeks been? Thrown up any surprises? Been sort of what you imagined, or nothing like it?
Well, I don't know what I imagined, because I didn't expect it to come upon me, really. So it was certainly a bit mind-blowing in the first few days, that's for certain. But as it's kind of sunk in, and I am now being invited to people, and people are reaching out to me as well. My predecessors have been very supportive, very friendly, very open to meeting up with me as well. So I'm doing that. I think things are starting to settle down a bit now, and I've got a bit of structure about where I'm going to go and what I'm going to do next.
And are you hoping to do sort of working with people who might never have thought about writing poetry?
Certainly, and I'm open to anyone wanting to have a chat with me. And if they have stories that they think could be told in a poetic way, then that's what I'm very open to at the moment. So I hope people do that. People are starting to do that. I hope they continue to do that, and I very much encourage them to do so. And then we'll see what emerges from that, I guess.
And have you written, because you were mentioning Litfest there, which obviously covers a celebration of all types of literature, not just poetry, but have you written or do you write outside of poetry itself? Do you write sort of just straight prose?
I'm not very good at it, to be honest. I think I struggle to come up with really sustainable ideas for long works, for stories, for novels, anything like that. So poetry appeals to me much more because it's a single thing a lot of the time, a single event or a single emotion that you can simply focus on and take a lot from that and hopefully spark other people's imaginations as well. The thing about poetry, of course, is it always means different things to different people. Every time I show someone something I've written, they come back to me and say, well, you were writing about this. And most of the time I wasn't writing about that at all. But that's what it meant to them. And isn't that always the way? And it's the same with great lyrics in songs as well, I think. People will make their own interpretations, and that's quite right.
And what do you think it's brought to your life over the years? You see, you've been writing for some time, you're a bard now. What does your poetry bring to your own life?
There's a thing about poetry, you know, that you write for yourself, but you're also writing for other people as well. So for me, certainly that sense of getting emotions out and being able to make sense of something I've read or something I've heard or something I've experienced. So in that sense, yes, there's release and expression, but there's also interpretation as well. And it's very much for me about thinking differently about something that's happened or thinking differently about an event. So trying to find alternative angles and being able to communicate that through poetry is something that means a lot to me. And that's where originality comes in. You always try to be original and you try to be authentic.
Well, listen, it's lovely to catch up. Congratulations again. I'm sure you're going to really enjoy the role and we'll be hearing more from you. And hopefully you can find time. I know bards are always busy because they're barding, they're writing, and they're usually working full-time as well and trying to fit in the rest of their life. So hopefully we can drop in on you a few times during your bardic year to see how it's going. In the meantime, do you have a poem we could have now, perhaps?
I certainly do have a poem. I'm wondering which one you'd like.
Oh, choose. You can choose.
I can choose.
Absolutely.
Can I?
Whatever you like.
Okay. Would you like something amusing? Would that be?
Yes.
Let's try and have some fun.
Good call.
All right. So I hope people find this amusing. I did. Okay. So this is called Feedback. Feedback. I'm sorry to inform you that you have been unsuccessful. You're not right for this position. I trust this news won't be too stressful. Thank you for your interest. Thank you for attending. Alas, we have to turn you down. There's no use in us pretending. You were lacking in the detail. Your answers were quite light. Your face won't fit. You're just not it. We don't think you'd be right. We were, frankly, disappointed and hoped for rather better. The weakest of the candidates, I'll put all this in a letter. You rolled up 50 minutes late. We assumed you'd changed your mind. You were rude and crude and boring. This might seem somewhat unkind. You never get a second chance to make a first impression. Yet you soon fell sound asleep, a look of peace on your expression. Might I ask what you were wearing? Such unusual attire. A trilby, waders, dungarees, some subtle form of satire. Oh, to stand out from the crowd. Yes, well, in that you did succeed. Full marks for your effort, combining sequins in with tweed. On this one point, I must insist, it's one thing after another. It's not acceptable at interview to be accompanied by one's mother. So don't call us, we won't call you. No hard feelings here, of course. It was clear you liked our company, it's just we're less keen on yours.
Great fun piece, that. And I love the fact Bradley doesn't feel confined to a particular style, theme or form in writing his poetry. Keep an ear and an eye open for his work in the months ahead. Finally, this evening, I heard from Manx-born author Luke Wilson, who writes under the name Luke Quayne recently, to say that the penultimate book in his fantasy series, The Carotha Chronicles, is now out. And apparently you can pronounce Carotha as you wish. It's a made-up word, and even the author isn't 100% certain how to pronounce it, so that's my best bet. Anyway, to hear more, I chatted with him down the line from his home in the UK and began by asking him to give us a brief précis of the storyline involving his eponymous hero, Alban, thus far.
Alban is he's in a fantasy world, so it's similar to ours, but kind of run differently. Alban is one of those children who doesn't feel quite like he fits in. Like he sees kind of where everyone else fits in, slots in and belongs. And he himself has kind of got all this internal anxiety and worry that he doesn't fit into any of these boxes that everyone else seems to happily be in. As the element of a fantasy book goes, he is placed in a job role as a child that he really, really doesn't think is right. Kind of, obviously I don't want to spoil it, but through the course of the book, it's kind of about Alban finding out where he does belong and maybe correcting a few of the previous system of his town along the way. So that's kind of very much the first book. The second book is him kind of trying to prove what he's learnt the last year to other people and kind of the struggles he has there. What I found the interesting thing of the second book was that Alban is going about trying to solve the thing he thinks is the problem and trying to fix everyone's kind of opinions and viewpoints and things, or change them anyway. But secretly what's going on is the bad guys are doing their own thing. Kind of the second book I left on a cliffhanger where those two elements collide and suddenly Alban is stood in front of the bad guys and they are so much more prepared than him and so much more threatening than he thought, because they'd gone about it in a different way than he thought was possible. And that's kind of where this third book picks up, is the aftermath of realizing how outnumbered and vulnerable they now are, and having to really deal with the repercussions of the errors he made last year.
So this third one, Alban and the Call to War, is out now. Now, you mentioned there that it was sort of interesting how the characters developed. When you started out writing with the first one, Alban and the Guardians, did you have a map in your mind of, right, this is going to be a sort of a trilogy or a quartet, or did you see that it was going to span over several books, or has it developed that way?
Kind of a bit of both. I think I'm definitely one of those people that kind of like lets their imagination run away from them. So when I first came up with the idea for Alban and the Guardians, I immediately kind of ran away with it being this like series, and it was going to be like, I planned out the whole story and it was going to be four books in order to tell this whole story. But then I had to very much bring myself back down to earth and be like, you haven't even written the first one yet, so write that one and then see where you go, which I did do. And I very much enjoyed. So that when I wrote the first one, I think I kind of was a bit more grounded and then realized like, oh, you know, if you've only wrote the one, that's still really, really good and I'm still really, really happy with it. But then when I found out I could kind of do three more, I was very, very excited and ran away with the plans there.
And did you always have this sort of overall title of the Karatha Chronicles? Was that something which, again, you had from day one?
It wasn't something I had from day one. And I'm going to be honest, and maybe a bit too honest here, I regret the name of the town as the Karatha Chronicles. I kind of wrote the first book and kind of, you know, I wrote it for fun and I wrote it for me. It very much wasn't my job at that point. It was just like a hobby. So I enjoyed the kind of element of fantasy reading where you don't, no one actually knows how to pronounce the words because they're not real words. Famously, Harry Potter, J.K. Rowling had this with Harry Potter, where I think it was the fourth book, she has a character struggle to pronounce Hermione's name so that she could phonetically tell him how to say it, so that the audience reading the books learnt how Hermione was pronounced. And I just thought that was like that sort of element and I think it's true in fantasy. You just kind of, you don't, when it's not a word you're used to or a name you're used to, you just kind of don't really read it. You just kind of go up to that person and then carry on. And I thought it was a funny little joke to name my town unpronounceable, so that even if you tried, it was really difficult to pronounce. And then I didn't realize that then for the next, you know, it's now going to be the Karatha Chronicles and I'm still going to be trying to struggle through pronouncing it myself. And like when we go around the schools, I have to, you know, I do a reading for the kids and I'm having to read Cariotha every single time and probably change the pronunciation every single time.
Well, if nothing else, it makes them think about words and spelling and, yes, how, you know, pronunciation, I suppose. You were interesting when you were talking about or giving a praise of the first two books, and you were saying how you thought it had been interesting for you how characters developed in book two. Is this something which happens when you get going? Do the characters take on their own life, and then sometimes you find perhaps the story going in a slightly different direction to the one you'd originally planned?
Oh, very much so. Yeah, that was something that really surprised me and kind of took on its own form. Is I'd kind of, when I was writing, I think it happens in book two, there's a specific character called Matty, and she's like this kind of strong female character. And I'd originally had it planned for her, I can't quite remember the decision off the top of my head, but to make like a certain decision, which wasn't the strongest decision, or she was going to advise Albin something. But she was, you know, the advice she was going to give Albin to like direct the story was not something Matty would have said. I had it so planned out that was like a pivotal point in the book and the plot of the book that I got to that. I wrote out the sentence of like, oh, Matty says this, and stared at the like blinking cursor on my Word document as I realized like Matty would never say that. And I very quickly realized this character is kind of a, got ahead of me and is much more a real character than I originally thought could be possible. And yeah, had to do some very quick editing to still make the Albin go to a certain way when obviously his friend is going to advise him differently now.
And we'll hear more from Luke next week, including how he's drawn on his Manx childhood and Manx folklore to help create his fantasy world. That's about it for now. We'll be back next week when we'll have a timbled ball or two. See you then. In the meantime, be good, whatever you're doing. Be creative about it. Hey, Moo.